I've three guests in the studio today from the Ver Poets. Terry Jones is chair. Anna Avebury is a member of the group, as is Chris Delaney. Looking at poetry on radio is quite tricky. People who are listening to this now, like me, will be saying, well, hang on a minute, what do I know about poetry? I know a fair amount about novels and fiction because that's in my daily life. I probably read that more often than anything else. Crime fiction is the greatest pleasure and popularly at the moment, apparently. But also film and TV are much more based on the narrative structures of what we would think of as fiction, as novels, as it were. Poetry, to many people, is a bit scary. Do you find that in your own experience, this is what you've been through to get here?
It can be seen as scary, but it's a very interesting point that you're making about poetry and the radio, because radio is actually poetry's natural medium, because poetry essentially should be heard. It isn't, unlike a novel, something that you take away and curl up with and spend the afternoon reading. You can read poetry silently to yourself, but poetry is best appreciated when it is actually heard. And so it's something that we've had to get used to doing as poets, emerging poets, and that is actually daring to read our poems to an audience. Red Kites Over Home Farm. They ride the autumn air, forked tails fluttering in warm updrafts, wings outstretched. Together they hover, then stoop, a heartbeat apart, each mirroring the other as the carousel turns and they circle the field below. The practiced rise and fall, a daily rite, like hands at the piano, in perfect time. They know the score too well, waiting for the cue, the breeze that spells decay, then the targeted descent to lunch below.
I remember discovering poetry at school, just in the school library, and picking out these books. Actually, they were little black penguin books called Penguin Modern Poets.
Oh, yes.
And they weren't on the curriculum. And I thought, even though I didn't really understand all of it, I thought, this is brilliant. And I think a lot of people come to poetry very, very young. But the fear for me was that I had no one to talk to about liking it, really. And when I started writing, I remember doing this, writing in the library, I'd have my arm over the book so people couldn't see that I was writing,
writing poetry.
And it's because I thought it was, I guess I thought it was a bit unmanly. I mean, we're talking 1960s.
Yes, 1960s, right.
But there was something, you know, I had no models. It's just something I discovered, and I thought, this is terrific.
I do remember writing my first poem, and it was something private, and I didn't want to share it with anyone else. But I do remember that when I started writing poetry as an adult, I mean, I started reading it in my teens, but when I started writing it, I was quite keen to find a way to get it published. And so I was looking for magazines, for outlets for it. I did want to share it.
No, well, I did write poetry from a very young age.
Oh, right, okay.
Really. But I didn't have any idea, clear idea about what I wanted to do with it, or whether I wanted to be a poet as I got older. Fortunately, I did have a teacher who was very encouraging. She was one of these teachers who can really impart their love of the English language and of poetry and of the written word generally. And she really did help. In fact, I was fortunate enough to have a first poetry pamphlet published last year. And my teacher came along, didn't she, to the launch, which was lovely of her to come along for that. And I dedicated the book to her, of course.
Terry, you talked about when you were a student. Now, anybody who's been at school ever has read poetry because it's somewhere on the curriculum, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's not that we're not exposed to it. Is it that we're given the wrong impression of it?
We all read text all the time. And normally the purposes for reading are getting information. And we learn to read quite quickly. We study is mainly reading. So something else happens in poetry. It's not just about the meaning. Something else goes on. And whatever that thing was, is what I picked up when I started reading these Penguin Modern Poets. There was an excitement there. Here's the thing. I didn't always know. In fact, very often didn't know what it actually meant. But I knew it was exciting and I knew I wanted to discover what it meant. So there was a kind of journey. The meaning wasn't apparent. But there was something about the sound, the ideas, images, words doing things that you didn't know words could do, that were more parallel to other forms of art, like music, which I loved, the visual arts, rather than, if you like, study, history, books. And so it's discovering that words did something new and exciting and unique, and I wanted more of it.
Is it that there is nobody who attempts to be a poet if they don't love language?
It's language as a medium, in the way that painters love paint, or musicians will love their musical instrument. You know, they might polish the violin and really take care of it. But I think research has been done which shows that the centres in the brain that are stimulated by music are also stimulated by poetry. And so when you mentioned the kind of music of a poem, and that, I think, is what was coming across to me when I was reading as a teenager. I think what I was enjoying, unconsciously, because I wasn't reading it out aloud, I was experiencing it on the page, but you could still feel that there was a kind of song there, that was, it was musical. Yeah. And I think that's something that I continue to treasure about poetry. But that's only one dimension. It has lots of different dimensions.
Many of us have much more experience of the novel, of fiction, than we do of poetry. Yeah,
including us, by the way.
I devour novels. I love, there's nothing I love more than curling up for the afternoon with a good book.
And so you're
reading.
Saying you're looking there again for the sense of the love of language.
Other things come in novels, aren't they? It sort of refers to either magical worlds or the world that we know, or characters, or even or puzzles. You know, so I used to love detective novels and thrillers. Well, used to, still do, because there's a puzzle. William Butler Yeats, great, great Irish poet, loved Agatha Christie. And that's how he relaxed.
I think when you're reading a novel, I think it is, it's a very different type of reading experience. I think relaxation, well, is poetry meditative? I find fiction meditative.
Yeah, it can be.
So that when I lose myself on the page in that world with those characters, it's a slightly different kind of interaction. So that when I finish a good book, a book I've really enjoyed, I miss it. I miss the people. I think, well, what happened? You know, well, what happened about that bit? What happened afterwards? You know, when they're living happily ever after. What else happens?
Yes.
So there's that sense of connection. When you come to the end of a poem, I think you're left with different thoughts, different feelings. It's more a, oh, I see. Oh, I understand. I feel when I'm reading poetry, what I'm getting is insight. Another way of thinking about an emotion, or another way of seeing emotions, or another way of seeing a tree, or of thinking about relationships, experiences. So it's a slightly different experience, I think, to reading fiction.
And everything's rather shortened, isn't it?
It is.
I think that's what
you have to get the points across quite succinctly. And I think, as you sort of were talking about, finding new ways to express things that are familiar to us, so that you suddenly wake up and think, wow, you know.
Yes. There's a lovely poem by Daphne Glogue in this book that we published last year, which tries to imagine what it would be like if you were a sundial. That's on the one hand really weird, but also rather amazing, you know. And so there's a little leap of imagination. And then suddenly a different way of looking at the world opens up in, what, 10 lines? Tiny amount of text.
Yeah. You've talked quite often about the shortness, the brevity of poetry by comparison with other media, because its history is far from brief.
It used to do in pre-literate society what novels do now. So in other words, the big stories, the big imaginative stories, the soap operas, were told in poetry. They were actually written down performances of stories that were very important in society, that dealt with things that people in the society cared about. So they were the entertainment, the education for people who were not literate.
Yes. Some would argue that we're in a post-literate era, in that words on pages are not read as often for the same reasons as they might have been in the past. Is there time for poetry to go back to that length, that declamation? That,
of course, there are all these new media now. In fact, there's a whole range of new poets who read on YouTube, Instagram. Is it Rupi Kaur who's become a best-selling poet from doing stuff on, I think, on Instagram?
And self-publishing in that way. Yeah. She put her own poems into the public domain. Yeah. She didn't go via a literary agent. Yeah. She didn't go via a publishing house. She didn't have to be accepted or rejected. Yeah. She just published.
mixture. There is actually a constant reinvention of poetic utterance, if you like. Years ago, rap is new things now, isn't it? But of rhymed, semi-sung verses has been a very important influence, certainly a couple of decades ago. And I think it, you know, people still are talked about as rap. Slam poets.
And performance poetry is very popular. It may be more popular with younger members of the audience, but there has been quite a lively debate as to its status, because although it's primarily performed, it can also be written down.
Yeah, I mean, Kate Tempest.
Kate Tempest is the best example,
Was a performance poet. She's probably in her late 30s now, but sells a lot of books, as well as doing a lot of gigs.
And there are lots of poetry festivals and there are lots of poetry readings. I think in a strange way, unlike fiction, poetry is a very communal medium. Mm, it's keeping going what was happening in those pre-literate days when people gathered in the mead hall to hear Beowulf, this story of this wonderful Anglo-Saxon hero. Mm. And people continue to gather to listen to poems. Mm. So you might write in isolation, you know, the cliche of the poet, the artist in the garret, penning these wonderful poems like Shakespeare and Shakespeare in Love. There may be an essence of truth still there. We all retreat to write, but we join with other people to read it. Mm. Although poetry books do sell to a certain extent, I think there's a lot more in the communal visiting of poetry festivals and other forms of literary festivals to actually hear poetry being read out loud and sharing that with other people.
Is that why Verpoets exists? Is that what it's for, to bring people together who otherwise would be in the garrets writing on their
own? I think
up to a point. I think it was set up by a lady 50, 60 years ago?
50 years ago.
And the aim there was to bring poems to a group of like-minded people, to get them torn apart or critted or... And that's your first audience in a way. And we still do that. All three of us go to sessions like that where you hand in a poem. But yeah, I mean, broadly, what we're trying to do is promote the enjoyment of poetry. For me, that is writing, but it's also reading. Mm. And I think the reading of poetry is the thing that we should do more of. Even people who write poetry, if you ask them what they read, a lot of them say, well, I don't read very much. And you think, well, how do you think you're going to get better unless you watch the masters and mistresses of the art? You know, if you want to be better, read what other people have done.
When I joined Verpoets is really when my poetry started to take off. I'd started writing. I knew I was enjoying it. I'd had one or two things published. But joining Verpoets brought me into contact with people who knew more than I did or had a little bit more experience than I did.
Yes, I found that
Did you find that, Chris, as well, when you joined? And people would suddenly say, have you read? Or going to the workshops and sharing a poem and people suggesting, well, you know, have you thought of leaving out that line and, you know, putting it this way? And suddenly you start to see things in a slightly different way.
Yes, you do. And also being able to comment on other people's poetry too is useful in that it makes you think and react to different types of poetry that necessarily you might not have
encountered
or looked at before.
Exactly.
So that's been very useful.
Yeah, learning to give good feedback is a really important and I think underrated skill.
Yeah. Well, even now I tend not to. I tend to be the one that sort of sits back a bit, you know, and I always feel other people are more knowledgeable than I am, but I am getting more confident.
Yeah. I think that's what comes of joining a group like Verpoets, and I think what people are looking for when they inquire about membership is this like-mindedness so that they don't feel as if they're on their own anymore and that they're going to have some sort of shared experience and perhaps gain through that association. Coming to the meetings, coming to the workshops, that it will be a way of nurturing what they've discovered they enjoy doing themselves.
True. But like-mindedness has got a reverse side as well, which is that they might feel that they're all too like-minded and I'm not going to be able to fit into that. I haven't done beyond GCSE English. Yeah. How do I get into this? I think, Chris, you came to this quite late. You said something earlier.
I did. I had a long break from writing poetry from the age, really, of 16 when I left school. I started work in a factory and became a wireman, making parts for aircraft. Then, after that, I tried to become an artist. a commissioning artist, which worked for about 2 years. And then I became a self-employed gardener, which is what I do to this day. And so I had a break of 3 decades before I came back to writing poetry. And it was really only when my school teacher from secondary school contacted me via the Friends Reunited website, which is not there now, it's defunct. But we exchanged emails and she sort of started to encourage me again and said, well, you really should join a local poetry society.
So she must have seen something there that even at the age of 16.
This poem is called Ardnish Peninsula, Scotland, and it's one of the poems from my debut collection. Snug inside the belly of your two-man tent, we watch pipistrelles quarter evening sky, harvesting air. Hear the river thrum the harp of a sheep's jawbone. By dawn, melody softens to measured intimacy. Scrolled fabric reveals in brightening light red deer poised along our horizon for the length of a heartbeat. From a coastal path, I see grey seals far below, draped on quartzite, tongued by breakers. And when sun's warmth snaps gorse pods, we snuffle sweet coconut. You trace with careful fingers the pattern of a fossilised tree across a rock face. Relate how the pulse of time oscillates from crystals, and I begin to believe in the possibility of permanence.
Is Chris unusual? I mean, and the other two of your ex-teachers, and I sort of assume that would not be uncommon.
There are lots of people like Chris who they've had an interest. They've written things, but they haven't developed it. I mean, I stopped writing because of life. You know, I had a career, I had a family, I was bringing up kids. And for me, you need a bit of space in your head to do this playing around that we talked about or finding that interesting. So I only started writing again when I could see retirement coming. And somehow my kids were getting older. They didn't need us all the time. So I began to get ideas for poems. So there was dormancy, certainly. But I think a lot of people get bitten by the bug very, very early. Lots of people, by the way, write in their teenage bedrooms, don't they? And then stop it. For all sorts of reasons.
As you say, life gets in the way.
Yeah.
But also the thinking, well, actually, this is doggerel, I'll stop now.
That is the other thing, you know. Is what I've written any good? Because you want it to be good. You don't want to write rubbish. And actually, the more you write, you realise that writing really well is really hard. Most of what you write, let me speak for myself, most of what I write is rubbish. It's because you're trying to get it right. I've actually seen people in other arts take ages over an image, a little bit of a painting or a drawing, or going over and over a musical phrase just to get that right.
Just to get it
and right. I think that when you care about it, it's like an infinite capacity for taking pains.
Yes.
And I think that's really quite important. There's a bit of, you know, people think about it as inspiration, but, you know, a lot of it is perspiration.
It is.
Well,
it
presumably is. The idea inspiration is, that's where the idea comes from.
For me,
but then you have to work very hard at the skills.
It's very different for different writers, but for me, it's an idea that begins to just form in your head. And sometimes it's a phrase, sometimes it's a rhythm, sometimes it's just, you know, I've written some poems about trees in my garden, and they've come from living with these trees and watching things happen to them over the course of a year. And eventually, suddenly an idea will come about my relationship to this tree, or the apple that's just fallen off it, or the leaves that have just vanished overnight in a wind or whatever. Yeah, the short answer, yes, it's an idea. Why Must I Tell You? By John Hussey. Why must I tell you about the elms? Born after they had gone, you never saw how, in New Year mists, they'd stand at anchor on fields of sticks, or how, in autumn sunsets, they'd blaze like ruined churches, traceries framing the perfect blue. You couldn't know why, on school tomorrow Sunday drives back home, I'd pick one waiting far ahead and watch that massive permanence go by until it slipped behind a hedge or little chef, arms still raised in recognition.
tomorrow it would still be there, unchanging through the day I'd feared. Why must I tell you about the elms? No, it's not just that they were beautiful and doomed, erased from the landscape like a vanished tribe. It's my selfish need to see live on what I felt about them too. The hope that somewhere, in a barren field, this memory might just take hold and raise an arm to the world still hurtling by.
Now, I expected that conversation to last about 15 or 20 minutes, but in fact we chatted for almost an hour, including my guest reading half a dozen poems. So rather than chop them off in their prime, which I appear to have done just then, I'm actually bringing them back again next week on Local Life, and this time talking a bit more about how any of us might get involved in writing our own thoughts and ideas, and more about Ver Poets as an organisation, its competitions, its publications and so on. Now, if you can't wait until next week but want to find out more about them now, just go to their website, verpoets.co.uk.